Today we're beginning with the Mishnah on the top of Samach Vav Amud Aleph. The Mishnah, again, continues to enumerate Averot that one is Chayav Skila for, and then expand on each one of them. Now we're up to HaMichalel et HaShabbat. A person who violates, profanes the Shabbat, B'davar SheChayavin Al Zdono Karet, V'Al Shegagol Chatat. Person that, when they do it intentionally, is Chayav Karet, and Al Shegagato, if they do it unintentionally, then they are Chayav Echatat. So now, this is counted amongst the niskalim. When you do a full-fledged melacha, you're going to be chayav skila for it. That is if you have edim v'hatra'a. If you have edim and warning, you'll get skila. Without that, then an intentional violation will result in karet. An unintentional violation will result in a chatat. Now the Balei Tosafot point out over here that the connection between skila and chatat is somewhat tenuous. And that is because not every melacha that you bring a chatat for will you end up with skila. But the other way around, anything you don't bring a chatat for, then you won't get skila. And that's what the connection is. So if you know something doesn't have a chatat associated with it, then you know for certain it doesn't have skila. There are certain melachot where you possibly could end up with bringing a chatat, but you would not be chayav skila. That has to do with the gemarot in Shabbat. The Gemara asks here, Meklau de'ika midei dechilu Shabbat havei vein chayavin lo shkigato chatat v'lo zdono karet. Implied in the Mishnah is that there are other Chilul Shabbat which doesn't result in these punishments. That means that you could do something wrong on Shabbat and not end up with Karet, Skila, or Echatat. What is there? The 39 Melachot, all the 39 Melachot in general are subject to Echatat unintentionally, intentionally Karet, Edim Vatra, Skila. What do you have left over? Maihi. What is left over? There are two things. The Gemara in Shabbat needs this in the seventh perek, because when someone knows that it's Shabbat, but they don't know about the 39 melachot. Gemara says, how can you know that it's Shabbat and not know about the 39 melachot? Because by definition, that is what Shabbat's about. Then what do you know about Shabbat if you don't know the 39 melachot? So the Gemara answers a similar refrain over here, which is, Tchumim valiba de Rabbi Akiva. Tchumim, according to Rabbi Akiva, is midoraita. In general, most of the Tanaim believe that Tchumim are only a bound midrabanan. The fact that you can't go out more than 2,000 amot is a perimeter that is only rabbinic in nature. Rabbi Akiva believes that Tchumim are deoraita. The Gemara in Shabbat, the Gemara in Sotah, brings the sources for Rabbi Akiva's position that it is midoraita. According to the Bavli, Rabbi Akiva's shita is that 2,000 amot, the Tchum of Shabbat, is a isur midoraita. The question is, what is the position of the Chachamim? Do the Chachamim believe that Chumim are midrabanan through and through? Or do the Rabbanan have a do'oraita level with Chumim? It's just much larger than the Rabbi Akiva's. Yerushalmi states that the Tchum do'oraita is 12 mil, keneged Machane Yisrael. And the question is, how do you resolve that Yerushalmi with our Gemara over here? Is that just the opinion of Rabbi Akiva in the Yerushalmi? Or is that the position of the Rabbanan? The Rabbanan don't believe that 2,000 amot is Tchum do'oraita, but they do believe that 12 mil is a din do'oraita. Our Mishnah, seemingly, is a proof that the Rabbanan do not believe that Tchumim are do'oraita at all. Because otherwise, the Gemara here could have established the Mishnah even like the Chachamim. They just have to give a wide enough berth that it'll be that it's do'oraita even for the Rabbanan. The fact that the Gemara went out of its way to state that it's only Rabbi Akiva's position seems to indicate that the Rabbanan don't believe it is Doraita at all. On the other hand, the Rambam in the Perish HaMishnayot and in his works, whether it's the Mishnah Torah and his Perish HaMishnayot and Sefer Mitzvot and other places, seems to indicate that Tchumim do have an aspect Doraita of them. And therefore, what does he do over here with our Gemara? He says, "Avachachamim omrim isur tchumim derabanan ve'in korim oto chilul ve'inam korim chilul al amalachot bilvad shechayavin al zdono karet v'shigago to chatat k'mo shnidver b'mikamo v'locha kechachamim." What the Rambam does in the end is say that you possibly can read this in the words of the Rambam that maybe the Rabbanan do believe that tchumim are doraita at a certain point at Yud Bet Mil. Just they don't believe that that's considered to be Chilul Shabbat. In order to be Mechalel Shabbat, you need something that has isur malacha associated with it, where your chayavos don't operate, shigagado chatat, and maybe a violation of the positive commandment of Shabbaton. Whereas tchumim is a violation of ayetzem ish mimkomo b'yom haShabbat, even though it might be a violation to oraita, it's not enough to be considered chilul Shabbat. And that way, there's a balance between it being even to oraita according to chachamim, but not qualified to be considered chilul Shabbat. So in the end, it turns out to be a machloket rishonim, and even a machloket halacha as to whether there is a point or a limit at which the chachamim believe that tchumim are doraita, or tchumim derabanan through and through. But even Rabbi Kiva, who believes that's the Oraita, doesn't believe you get karet or skila for it, and you don't bring a chatat. So there's a possibility you can have a violation of Shabbat, the Oraita, that doesn't result in one of these punishments. And Havara, Vadi b'Rabbi Yosi. The other possibility is the machloket that we saw a number of times here, between Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Natan, about when you have an extra item that is enumerated. What do you do with that? So we had that by Hishtachava as well. You could say that it's Lalav Yatzat. It's kind of tell you that the din of this item is different, and it's only a violation of a lav, it's not subject to the punishment of the other violations. Or, l'chalek yatzat. It's kind of to teach you that even though the terminology that's used here is a broad and encompassing terminology, like on Shabbat, where you can't do any malacha, but it doesn't define for you malacha. That comes out of the many different limudim in the Gemara and Shabbat. Let's say it's from the juxtaposition to the Mishkan. So we learn the 39 malachot from that juxtaposition of malacha to the Mishkan. But then still, the only violation you're in violation of is don't do the malacha. It's a sur to do malacha on Shabbat. Now if you do multiple malachot, are you going to be chayav once? Are you going to be chayav for each one of them? Well, if the lav or the isur is just one, lo tasu kol malacha, then you should only be chayav one no matter how many malachot you're in violation of. Along comes havara, which is distinguished by itself in the Torah. It's one of the few melachot that is mentioned in the Torah. Lo tvaruesh b'chol moshvetechem b'yom haShabbat. That teaches you one of two things. It either teaches you that lalav yatzat, that lo tvaruesh is different. All the other melachot result in a punishment, skila, karet, and a chatat. Havar is different. It's just a lav. Lo taviru. That's what it is. That's one opinion. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. And that's what the Gemara is saying here. You can be in violation of a din d'oraita, according to Rabbi Yossi, and yet not end up with a mitat beit din, because it's only a lav, according to him. The other opinion, Rabbi Natan believes that it's the chalek yatzat. That Havara is coming to teach you that the melachot encompass 39 melachot, so why did it specify Havara? To teach you that each one individually you're going to be chayav for. Havara is just an example to teach you that we're going to break them down into their component parts, and you're chayav for all 39 melachot, not just one time for lotasu kol melacha. As opposed to on Yom Tov. On Yom Tov it might be different. There may not be any chibuk malachot on Yom Tov. That means on Yom Tov, if you violate multiple malachot, you would only be chayav once. As opposed to Shabbat, where you violate multiple malachot, you're going to be chayav for each one of them because of this limit of lechalek yatzat. Right? But here we're saying, according to Rabbi Yossi, who thinks it's lav yatzat, you can have a violation d'oraita that does not result in mita. Next Mishnah. Hakmekalel aviv v'imo. Person who curses their parents. Enu chayav. Achi kalaleim b'shem. They're only chayav if you use the name of God to curse them. Kilaleim b'kinui. If they do it through a kinui, we'll just use the term loosely, nickname, then Rabbi Meir Michayev, Rabbi Meir says it's the same din. Chachamim putrim. The Chachamim say that that's not the case. There is no cursing of the parents. You're not in violation if you don't use the shem Hashem. What is the shem versus the kinui? Rashi over here says that the shem is obviously Yudkei Vavkei, which is the shem or the proper name of God, and likely includes other shemot Hashem like Yud-Kei and Adushem. Although you could read Rashi saying that it only means Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei, and names that are above that, meaning the shemot HaMiyuchadim, although it's more likely the former way that we explain. Kinoi, Rashi says, is Tzvakot, Shakai, Rachum, Chanun, any of the other names of Hashem, that even if you can erase them or can't erase them, all of those names are considered to be kinui and captured by the word kinui. So for Rashi, kinui is a very broad term. It includes both names of Hashem that cannot be erased, like Rachum v'Chanun, but they are adjectives that describe Hashem, as well as things like Tzvakot and Shakai, where you cannot erase them. Those are considered to be more names of Hashem than Rachum v'Chanun, but they're not up there with Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei. According to Rashi, those are all captured in kinui. So that's one way to divide it. The Shem Hashem versus the kinuim. The other way to divide it up is, like the Yad Ramah suggests, the Shem means Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. The kinui means those names that can't be erased, which are Yud-Kei, Adushem, and Tzvakot, Shakai. That's another division. Or the Rambam says, B'Shem could include any name that can't be erased. So Hashem would include Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei, Shakai, Tzvakot. And then Kinoi would be Rachum v'Chanun and all those names that can be erased. The Mishonim break it down in different ways between these two as to what it means B'Shem and what it means B'Kinoi. It really depends on what you include in B'Shem, then what would be left over to be in Kinoi. or the other way around. What you think is in kinui, then we'll leave open what's included in shame. And the Rishonim have different approaches here. Man chachamim. Who are the chachamim over here who say you're patur by kinui? Rabbi Menachem b'Rabbi Yossi. It's Rabbi Menachem b'Rabbi Yossi d'Tanya. Because you have a brayta. Rabbi Menachem b'Rabbi Yossi omer b'nakavo shame yumat. So we actually had this earlier because we had this when we did Birkat Hashem. So it says, "V'nokev shem Hashem mot yumat, ragom yirgimuvo kol ha'ida, kager ke'ezrach b'nakavo shem yumat." So here you have nokev shem. At the end of the pasuk, you have say b'nakavo shem. So where Rabbi Nachum Rabbi Yossi says b'nakavo shem at the end of the pasuk is extraneous. You already told me in the beginning of the pasuk b'nokev shem. Why do you have to tell me at the end of the pasuk b'nakavo shem? So he learns im enu inyan the Birkat Hashem. If it's not needed for Birkat Hashem, then we're going to use it for Mikalel Avivimo, cursing one's parents. The fact that it's extraneous over here leads Rabbi Menachem Rabbi Yossi to say that we're going to use it for Avivimo. Now, what's interesting about this, and Rashi already notes it, is that we used it earlier. When we spoke about Birkat Hashem, we said that in the Mishnah it says that he has to be Yakeh Yossi B'Yossi. Birkat Hashem includes the cursing Chas V'Shalom of Hashem's name with Hashem's name. And that you have to use Hashem's name twice in the curse, which is Yakeh Yossi et Yossi. That was what the Mishnah said. How did we know that? Gemara learned it from an Okev Shem, B'nakvo Shem, that it said it twice. Not only you have to use the name, but you have to use the name to curse. And so, obviously, what Rabbi Nachum Rabbi Yossi, if he uses it, says it's extraneous, he does not subscribe to that position. And that's what Rashi says over here, that he believes, Afilu Berech Shem B'Shem, Ella Yitbarech Yossi, if he simply just curses the Shem Hashem, then he is Michayev on that. So that is the position of Nachum Rabbi Yossi. Doesn't agree with what we said before, Yakeh Yossi et Yossi. Man, he uses the extra b'nakvom shame yumat, matam olomar shame. What is the extra shame for? From that you learn that you have to have the shame Hashem in the klala in order to be chayav. So now the Gemara is going to darshan the pasuk that restricts one from cursing their parents. That's found in Parshat Kiddushim. We've been darshaning many of the psukim that are found in Parshat Kedoshim, and this is one more of these psukim, and it starts out, it's a braita that takes the words one by one in the pasuk, and darshans them. It's similar to other braita that we have seen along the way, because the pasuk starts, ish ish. And so the braita will start out asking about that. The pasuk says, ki ish ish ashir yekalel et aviv et imo mot yumat, aviv imo kilel damav bo. Tarabanan, ish. It says ish. Matam ulomar ish ish. Why do you need the double Lashon Vishish? There are both Bat, Tumtum, Vadroginus. Comes to include a daughter, a Tumtum and Androginus. Tumtum is a non-discoverable gender. Androginus is someone who has both genders. They are included by the extra Ish. What's interesting over here, the Baal Yad Tosafot already asked it, is that we have a general principle that the Torah Hishva Ish Lisha, the Kol Unshin Shiva Torah. The Torah equates men and women for all punishments in the Torah. There's no distinction. Even if it's written in Lashon Zachar, the Torah says it applies equally to men and women. So what was the Hava mean over here that you would suggest that a woman be precluded, that you need ish to include the woman? So what the Baal Yad Tosafot say is that if the Torah writes the Isur b'Lashon Zachar, we won't assume that it's precluding a woman. Then if it goes out of its way to use the word in particular, ish, which is not necessary over here, and it uses ish, ish is indicative of man and not woman. And so the drasha, when you use the word ish, would be ish velo isha. So that's why you need ish to come to tell you ish, ish, miut, achar miut, barabot, and comes to include an isha and a bat. Now truthfully, tumtum and androginus should automatically be included then, because they're safek zachar, safek nekeva. Once you have ben and bat, then automatically tumtum and androginus should be brought in. So either it's because the Gemara, whenever it does this, throws everything together and puts it in, or you can say that there is an opinion that Tumtum and Androginos are Birya Bifnei Atzma. They're their own category, and that's what it's coming to include them as well. Right, so then the puzzle continues, Asher Yikalel et Aviv ve'et Imo, the one who curses his father and his mother. In the Ela Aviv ve'imo. You would have thought the Vav is a Vav Achibur, that would say that you have to curse both the father and the mother to be in violation. Aviv Shelo Imo, Imo Shelo Aviv. If he curses his father, not his mother, or his mother, not his father, minayin. How do you know you're chayav there? Tamlomar aviv imo kilel. It says that his father and mother, he was mikalel. Damor aviv imo kilel, damav bo, aviv kilel, imo kilel, divir aboshayo. So here, if you look at the way the posuk is laid out, it says, ki ish asher yikalel et aviv, et imo. So that's one piece of the posuk. And at the end of the pasuk says, Aviv imo kilel damav bo. So in the first part of the pasuk, the word kilel is juxtaposed to Aviv. So Tikalel et Aviv et Imo. In the latter part of the pasuk, it says Aviv Imo Kilel. The Kilel is next to his mother. So for that, they learn out that the Aviv is subject to Kalala, and so is the Ima subject to Kalala, independent of each other. And so though, even though you could have read it Aviv ve Imo to mean both of them, nevertheless, since it has the word Kilel twice in the pasuk, once next to Aviv, once next to Imo, comes to teach you that cursing either one of them will result in this punishment. You don't have to curse both of them. So that both the father and the mother have a klala that is associated with them, that is the view of Rabbi Shaya. Rabbi Yonatan Omer, this is a machloket throughout Shas, between Rabbi Shaya and Rabbi Yonatan. Whenever you have a pasuk that includes a vavachibur in it, do you look at the vavachibur as being and? Or do you look at the vavachibur as being a vavachiluk and saying that it's or? And so what Rabbi Yonatan says, mimashma shishneim keachad, mishamashma echad bifnei atzmo. When you say aviv v'imo, it can mean and, or it can mean or. How do you know if it's a vavachibur or a vavachiluk? It can easily function in either way. And therefore you don't need any limud. Unless the Torah specifies that it's only the two of them together, otherwise you can look at them as being separate entities or a single entity. So whenever it says aviv v'imo, we're going to say it means aviv v'imo, aviv, or imo. And that'll be fine. So except when he uses the word yachtav over here, what does that mean? Rashi claims it has to do with lo tacharosh b'shor v'chamor yachdav, that the restriction against plowing with kilayim, hitching up both the shachor and a chamor together. Over there, the pasuk specifies yachdav, says together. Now, why would the pasuk have to tell you yachdav if the pasuk is written lo tacharosh shor v'chamor? It has a vav v'chibor. If you tell me every time there's a vav v'chibor, it means both, then why do you have to tell me yachdav? So it must mean that Yachtav is coming to teach you, otherwise you would have thought separately. It'd be asur to hitch up a shore, asur to hitch up a donkey, but then together, they don't even have to get them together, individually. So Yachtav comes to teach you only when they're together. So what Rabbi Yonatan proves from that is that when the Torah specifies Yachtav, that means only when they're together. Otherwise it can mean and, or it can mean or. And therefore Aviv Imo means either father and mother, or father or mother. As opposed to lo tacharosh b'shor b'chamor Yachtav, there, if you had had the word yachtav, you would have said shor and chamor, shor or chamor. But now you have yachtav, it tells you to put them together. You don't have that here by aviv v'imo, and therefore you would read them together or read them separately. That's the way Rashi reads it. Balei Tosafot are not happy with that. And they say, v'tema, in kein Rabbi Yoshaya, ma'iktiv b'hu yachtav. If that's the explanation according to Rabbi Yonatan, then according to Rabbi Yoshaya, what's the whole purpose of the word yachtav? The word yachtav has no meaning for Rabbi Yoshaya. Rabbi Yoshaya says when you have a vav, the vav of chibur means both of them together. So then Yachtav is completely extraneous for Rabbi Yoshaya. But what is it? El al korchachach. You have to say, Yilav Yachtav, havamina d'lo yachrosh b'shor v'chamor ke'echad, aval pish ink shurim. So what he's saying is, it's much easier to understand in kilayim, which is kilei bigadim. For instance, when you have wool and linen together, how tightly integrated do the wool and linen have to be? When you say Yachtav, Yachdav, according to the Bayit Tosva, comes to teach you that they have to be hitched and tied together. Otherwise, you would have thought the restriction is you can't plow with a shor and a chamor together. Even if they're tied up separately and they're not hitched together, it'd be a sur. Yachdav comes to say you can't hitch them together. They can't be doing it together. That's a restriction. And Kilei Begadim, the same thing. You would have thought that putting wool and linen together is a problem. The answer is Yachdav. It's got to be completely integrated. They got to be stitched together. They got to be knotted together in order to be chayav. And that's what he says the word yachtav means. But then, what does it mean here according to Rabbi Yonatan? According to Dalei Tosfot, he explained Rabbi Shaya, but according to Rabbi Yonatan, what does it mean? Ela misvara kamar. It's a svara. He's not telling you that to use the word yachtav by kilayim. He's just saying a svara. Until the Torah tells you, put them together, you can assume it means and it means or. The Torah specifies or misvara, you would know that the Torah wants to do that. Otherwise, he says, there's no reason to believe that the vav chibur is the only way to read it. Alright, so now the Braita continues. Motumat, that you'll be put to death for cursing one's parents. Biskila, that is through the punishment of stoning. Atalmer biskila, how do you know it's skila? Maybe it's skila, maybe it's one of the other punishments of Beitin. Nemarkan, the pasuk ends with the mav bo. And it says by Ovin Yidoni, the Mehem Bam, which is the paradigmatic Aveira that results in Skila, and there it says the Mehem Bam. So Malalan Biskila, Afkan Biskila. That's what we saw earlier in the Masechta, that Damav Bo, the Mehem Bam, all connect you to Ovin Yidoni and tell you that there is a punishment of Skila. Onesh Shamanu. So now we know what the punishment is. That's found here in the Pasuk in Kiddushim. Azara Minayin. Where is the lav that tells you you may not do this? This tells you if you do it, what's going to happen to you. Ki ish ish asher yikalel v'davim v'imo. Tells you what you're going to happen is mot yumat. But how do you know that you're not allowed to curse your parents? You always have to have the Torah, when it specifies an onesh, it also needs to have a lav which tells you don't do this. And then the onesh tells you if you do this, this is what's going to happen to you. So Gemara wants to know, where's the asara from? Talmud lomar elokim lo tikalel. One may not curse elokim. Imaya aviv dayan. If his father was a judge, Haru Bichlal Elohim Lo Tikalel. So over here, the word Elohim, and we're going to see this lower down on the Amud, the word can be written as Elohim, which we refer to as Dayan, or it can be read as Elohim, which means it would refer to God. So over here, the Gemara is using the word Elohim here to mean a Dayan. So it says Elohim Lo Tikalel. You may not curse a judge. So if his father was a judge, he would be subsumed under that restriction of Elohim Lo Tikalel. V'maya Viv Nasi. His father was the Nasi or the king. Haril Bichlal, Benasi Bamcha, Lo Taor. You may not curse a leader in your nation, meaning the Nasi or the Melech. Eino lo Dayan v'lo Nasi. What happens if he's not a Dayan and not a Nasi? Minayin, where do you know that from? Amart. Hari Adan Bibinyanav. You do it through a Binyanav. You do it through setting up a paradigm, which is Mishnehem. You can do it from both of them. Lo Re'i Nasi Kira'i Dayan. Dayan kirai nasi, because a dayan is not like a nasi, and a nasi is not like a dayan. Lorei dayan kirai nasi. Dayan's different or differentiated from the nasi. Sharei dayan atam mitzuveh al haurato. You are required to follow his psak halacha. When the dayan gives a psak halacha, gives hora'ah, you have to follow the hora'ah. Especially if it's the Beit Din HaGadol, then you can have a zukin mamre if you don't follow the ra of the Beit Din HaGadol. So you have this requirement to follow his instructions. Kirei nasi, like the nasi, shiata mitzuvel horato. You don't have to follow the psak halacha of the king or the psak halacha of the nasi, because he's not the posek. He is the political leader. He is not necessarily the religious leader. On the other hand, the lori nasi kirei dayan. That which is true of the nasi is not true of the dayan. She nasi atam mitzuvel hamra ato. You can be prosecuted for moreid b'malchut, for rebelling or for violating the orders of the king or violating the orders of the nasi. We already saw this earlier in the Masech, and we learned this out from Yeshua, because it says, Kol ish asher yamreid picha, anybody who violates your word or your instructions will be put to death. So there you have a death penalty for moreid b'malchut. But on the other hand, kirei dayan, shiata mutzavel hamrato. By the Dayan, there's no question about not following his instructions of Mered B'Machut. Each one of them has a different power or power set. By the political side, the Nasi or the king, you're not allowed to violate their political rules or orders. On the other hand, by the Dayan side, you can't violate his religious orders, his Psak Halacha. But by the Dayan, he doesn't have the din of Mered B'Machut, and the Nasi doesn't have a din of Horato or Psak Halacha. So the Tzadah Shaveshaben, the common denominator between them is Shem Ba'amcha. They are members of your nation, but Tamuzhara Kilalatan, and you're not allowed to curse them. Afani Avi Avicha Shem Ba'amcha. I will include your father, who's also amongst the people, but Tamuzhara Kilalatan, and you're restricted from cursing him. It says, Malat Zadah Shaveshan, there is a common denominator between Nasi and Dayan, Litzadah Shaveshan, Shekin Gudulatan Garmalahan. Their position is what precludes you from being able to curse them. The reason you can't curse them is because they're both in positions of power. One's in a religious position of power, one's in a political position of power. But maybe that's the reason you can't curse them, is because of their high position, not because they're a part of your nation. If that's the case, your father would not be included, or you couldn't include your father through that paradigm. And even though there is a necessity for a child to give honor or kavod to their parents, olegadlo, meaning something to do with stature, nevertheless, that's a one-to-one relationship. That's a particular relationship for this individual. The stature of the Dayan and the Nasi is a stature that affects all of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, that's not considered to be close enough or the same as the Dayan and Nasi in order to include the Av along with the Binyan Av from the Nasi and the Dayan. Therefore, we need something else to help us include Aviv v'Imo. Talmud Lomar, there's a third person who the Torah instructs you not to curse, and that's Loti Kalel Cheresh. You may not curse one who is unable to hear you. There it's speaking about the lowest part of your nation, those people who are forgotten, those people that are the lower echelons of society. Now again, in their day, we remember, we've spoken about this many times, the cheresh was someone who was equivalent to the almanan, the yatom, people who were socially ostracized, bottom echelons of society didn't have the means normally of economic support, and therefore they were dependent on the community, the charity of the community. So here it says, because you shouldn't take advantage of someone who doesn't have the means to defend themselves or can't hear you when you curse them. So that's the umlalim. So mala cheresh shekein charishato garmalo. What about the fact that the reason you're precluded from cursing him is because he can't hear you? And so it's telling you, don't curse someone who can't hear you. Nasiv dayan yochichu. Nasiv dayan, who can hear, you're also precluded. Mala nasiv dayan shekein gdulatan garmalahan. You say the common denominator between Nasi and Dayan is that their stature is what precludes you from cursing them. Cheresh yuchiach. Then the cheresh will prove to you that's not the case because you're precluded from him and he's not someone of stature. B'chazar adin. So then you go back and forth and the common denominator is lo yizek reizeh, lo yizek reizeh. Each one of their particular nuances is not the same and so they cancel each other out. Hatzad shaveh shaveh, the common denominator between them is shein ba'amcho. They're members of the nation. Vata muzhar al kilatam, you're not allowed to curse them. Afani avi avicha. Also include your father. Shiba amcho, he's a member of your nation. Vata muzhar al kilatam, and therefore you should be restricted from cursing him. Where it says, wait a minute. Maybe that's not true. Malatzada shaveh shabahen. Maybe there is a common denominator between them. Shekein mishunim. They are different. They are unusual. The truth is, Rashi says, why can't you just say that there is a chumrah associated with each one of them? Each one of them has a certain chumrah, and that will cause the common denominator between them, because he says Aviv also has a chumrah. If you remember from earlier in the Masechta, that Aviv and Imo are compared to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The fear of parents is compared to the fear of heaven. And so therefore Aviv and Imo also have a chumrah, and that wouldn't have precluded it. The problem is Shekein Mishunim, which is the word Mitsuyan, actually today, has been lifted to mean someone who excels. But that's not the true meaning of the word. The word means mitsuyan means to be designated or to stand out. And that can mean both for the upside or the downside. A person who does very poorly is also a mitsuyan, and somebody who does very well is also mitsuyan. Today, we use the word only in one direction, which is to the positive side. But what they're saying here is shekein mishunin is exactly that. You are delineated differently than the mainstream of the nation. There is the bell curve. What's in the normal range of the bell curve? These people fall outside of the bell curve. Some of them to the upside, that's Nasi and Dayan. Some of them to the downside, which is the Cheresh. But they're outside the normal distribution or the normal layperson in the nation. So they do have a common denominator, which is they're out of the normal layperson. So then the Gemara says, all right, we've got to try something else. It's not going to work through creating a Binyan Av. It's not going to work through creating this paradigm by using all of these and saying what the common denominator is. Let's do this. Nichtav Kra. Let the pasuk write the following. O Elohim v'cheresh. It's only write Elohim and cheresh, which mean a dayan and someone who is deaf. O nasi v'cheresh. Or the king and someone who is deaf. And then you would have one of the others be extraneous. So in the case here where it says nasi v'cheresh, in the case where you had both the nasi and the cheresh being picked, you could have learned out Elohim from that. You could have learned out dayan from that. Because if you argue the reason that the cheresh, you can't curse is because you can't hear, but the restriction applies to the nasi. So he can hear. If you think it applies to the Nasi because he is of stature, the Cheresh is precluded. Common denominator between them is that you can't curse them. A Dayan should be included. Ah, what are you going to say? That they are Mishunim? They're both different. So is the Dayan. Dayan is also different. He's outside the normal curve. And so therefore, Elohim would have automatically been learnt out. You don't need it to be written. So then, Elohim Lamali, why did the Torah then write Elohim if it wasn't necessary? You could have learnt it out from Cheresh and Nasi, or the other way around. You could have then Elohim and Cheresh, and then learned out Nasi from it. And then you could have asked the question, why do you need Nasi? Imeinu inyan legufo, if you don't need it for a Dayan, tzneu inyan le'aviv. We're going to use it for the father, or to tell you that there's a restriction against cursing one's parents. It says, Elohim chol. That works well according to the one who says that the pasuk of Elohim lo tikalel is referring to a Dayan. It spells Elohim. Elamand amar kodesh, the one who says it's Elohim lo tikalel, which is a reference to God, Micah the Maimar. Then that doesn't work. Because then the Elohim is not extraneous. If it's referring to a Dayan Elohim, then you could have learned it out in Nasi and Cheresh. Then you wouldn't have needed the word Elohim. Now then, if it's Elohim referring to God, how are you going to learn that out from a Cheresh and a Nasi? So, Tatanyo, we have a Braita. Elohim chol divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel believes that Elohim in the Pasuk references to a Dayan. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Elohim Kodesh. It references to God, not to a Dayan. So, Betanyo, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Azara l'mevarechet Hashem minayin. Where do you know that there is a restriction against the Birkat Hashem? Tamal Omar, Elukim, Lo Tikalel. So that's the Pasuk using it as Kodesh. Lamand Amar, Elohim, Chol. The one who says that Elohim refers to Chol, Gamar Kodesh, Michol. Then he can extrapolate. If you're not allowed to curse the Dayan, who's called Elohim, then certainly you're not allowed to curse Elohim, who is God above him. Lamand Amar, Elohim, Kodesh. If the one who says that Elohim refers to God and it's in Azhara against Birkat Hashem, Gamin and Chol, Mikodesh. He learns out Chol from Kodesh. Mar says, wait a minute. Bishlam Adamand Amar Elohim Chol, the one who says it's referencing to Dayan, Gamar Kodesh Michol. That's an upgrade, so you can understand why it would be a Kal V'chomer. If you can't curse the Dayan, then you certainly can't do Birkat Hashem. Lamand Amar Elohim Kodesh, the one who says it's referencing to God, Gamar Chol Mikodesh, where's the Kal V'chomer here? How can you downgrade from Kodesh and say, oh, Chol is also included? Dilma Kodesh Izhar, a Chol Lo Izhar. Maybe the Torah only restricts cursing of Hashem, Birkat Hashem, but it does not restrict against cursing a Dayan. It says, Imkain, Lichtov Kra Lo Takel, that the Pasuk should have written, Elohim Lo Tikalel, the double Lamed there, it could have written Lo Takel. The fact that it writes, Tikalel, my Lo Tikalel, Shma Mina Tarte. From that, you learn out both of them because of the Lo Tikalel, which Rashi points out here, the Klala or Mikalel is Shte Klalot B'mashma, as well as the word Elohim. By definition, the word Elohim is plural. So Elohim also embeds within it multiple items. It can embed Elohim and Elohim, Dayan and God. And just as an aside, we've spoken about it numerous times, that it's intentional. The Torah is ambiguous about the word Elohim. Sometimes it means Dayan, sometimes it means God. And in many ways, the Torah is conflating between them because it gives the Dayan the status like Elohim. And that's why when you go to court and you're standing in court, you have to look at it as if you're standing before Hashem. That's why the Dayanim sit and the Bali Din have to stand up. And we also look at, they have to wear they put a talus over their heads because they're be'ira, they're sitting there as if they are, bringing the Shekhinah as present with them. Meaning that idea of Elohim and Elohim being conflated is not just a nicety or it's not just, oh, it happens to be. There's an intention in the Torah to do that. And there are many dinim that overlap from that, including this, which is Elohim lo tikalel and Elohim lo tikalel. Can't curse both of them because in some ways they're in the same status. Obviously, it's all kiviyachol, but there is something to be said for that. And that's when you take a shvua, it says that you're going to go before Elohim, which is the Dayanim. But that means also, when you're taking a shvua, you're taking a shvua in front of God. Even though you're just taking it in front of man, but the truth is you're taking it in front of God. The use of that word makes sense to say that it references to both of them. So now, the Balei HaTosafot over here say, Garmar Kodesh Michol, he says, how do you know that you can upgrade? How do you know for sure that you can learn from Chol to Kodesh? If it was simply for a Kal V'chomer, that would not have been enough. If you use Elohim for Dayan, and then we said, oh, if you know Dayan, then certainly God is included. Tosafot says that's not enough. It's only because the word Elohim was used that allows us to include God. Because if you had a Kal V'chomer, there's an undermining of that Kal V'chomer. Because human beings are embarrassed and are affected by the curse that you place upon them. So there's a chumrah to a human being that doesn't exist with God. God's unaffected by the curse that you do. You can't do anything. You can't be pogeya on God. It's a chilul Hashem. You might cause problems in people's perception of God, but you can't change God through a curse. It's a problem of perception. It's a problem of what you're saying. But human beings, you can actually be pogeya. You can actually hurt them by cursing them, embarrassing them, psychologically affecting them. I mean, there's real injury that can happen from a curse. And so what Tosafot says, if it was just a Kal V'chomer that says, Uf Dayan, of course God, it wouldn't have been enough. Then you could have said it doesn't work, because people are different than God. God's not affected by curses, people are. That's why it's only because it was said in the word Elohim that teaches you that it's also God. And again, that goes back to what we just said before, is the intentional conflation of the words brings them together, which is that because Elohim, Dayan, is affected, so too will Elohim be affected by the same restriction that you can't curse either one of them. But it's because in particular it used the word Elohim, and not because it's a Kal V'chomer from Chol to Kodesh, because that you could undermine. Alright, next Mishnah. Haba al Nara ha-Murasa. Someone who consorts with a Nara Murasa, Enu Chayav Ajitei, he's not Chayav until she is a Nara, Bitula, and Mi'urasa. It needs to be all three of these. She has to be an age, which is Ne'ara. Ne'ara is from 12 to 12 and a half. A Ketana is below the age of 12. A Bogeret is above the age of 12 and a half. So Ne'ara is during that window of the 6 months. Bitula means that she is still a virgin. Me'urasa means that she's halachically engaged to someone, but has yet to have nisuin. Meaning that if she has chupa and yet to have biyah, then it would not be considered an arusa. Chupa already would bring her beyond the point of being an arusa, even though she is still a bitula. So you need all three of these things. Nara to preclude bogeret and possibly a ktana. Bitula to exclude a bi'ula. And me'urasa to exclude a nisua. Vehi bebeit aviyah. She still needs to be in her father's house. Bo aleha shnayim. If two people have biyah with her, harishon beskila, the first one is punished by skila, which is the punishment for consorting with a nara murasa, vasheni bechenek. And the second one is someone that is subject to the regular punishment for eshidish, which is chenek. Now, as would become clear from the Gemara later on, but should be obvious now from the Mishnah itself, that after the first one has biyah with her, she's no longer a bitula. So then obviously she's not a nara murasa. If you just told me one of the qualifications here to be a nara murasa is a bitula, then of course the second individual is not consorting with a nara murasa. So Rashi makes the point that the first one had biyah with her kshalokidarka, because then her bitulim remain intact. Despite the fact that her bitulim remain intact, the second one is only chayav chenek and not chayav skila. And so we'll see in the Gemara why that is, but that's important here. It has to be that she remains in nara and meurasa with a bitula and bebeit avia. Despite that, the second one who consorts with her is only chayav chenek and not chayav skila. Alright, so now the Gemara says, Tanu banan. So the Gemara now is going to, like it did in all these other cases, bring a braita, it is doresh the psukim, deal with this. It's found in Parshat Ki Teitze. Ki yeh nara betula me'urasa li'ish. Nara murasa, that's what we're speaking about. U'mitzai ish ba'ir v'shachav ima. Finds her in the city and he consorts with her. V'otzeitem et shnehem el shara ir. They're both taken out, ayi. U'skaltem utam ba'banim. You stone them. V'meitu et nara al devar sholo tzaka ba'ir. She didn't ask for help, or maybe she was consensual in the relationship. Because he violated his friend's wife. If he finds her in the field, and he rapes her, here it's not a consensual relationship, he alone will be subject to the death penalty. She doesn't get any penalty. Ein lara chet mavet, because she has no reason to be put to death. Ki kasher yakum ish areyu etzachon nefesh, kein edavar hazeh. Ki basadeh mitza'ah, he found her in the field, tza'aka nara murasa v'in moshi'alah. She calls out, but there's nobody to save her because she was caught in a position where nobody could come to protect her and she wasn't consensual. So those are the parshiot of nara amirurasa. Now the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, ne'ara, the fact that the pasuk says that, ki yen ne'ara, ne'ara means velo bogeret. Means Nara comes to exclude someone above the age of Nara. Bitula velo bi'ula. Bitula means someone who is a virgin and not a bi'ula. Mi'urasa velo nisua. Bi'veit avia, that is in her father's house. Now the words beit avia do not exist in this parsha. We just read both of the parshiot of Nara and Murasa. They do not exist over here. Beit avia is not found here. Beit avia is actually found in the parsha of Motzi Shemra. Motzi Shemra, which is another parsha that's over here as well, there Motzi Shemra is also very similar because it mentions Nara Murasa there as well, which is Kikach Ishi Shal Baleo Sneya V'Sam Lalilo Tevarim V'Otzi Aleha Shemra V'Mar Et Ha'Isha Zod Lakachti V'Krav Elev Lo Matzati La Bitulim. I didn't find a bitulim for her. And then they bring her to the Ziknei Ha'ir and they go through and adjudicate the case. And then it depends. If he's found to be guilty that he made it up, then he has to pay a fine and he has to take the woman. On the other hand, if she is found to be guilty, so over here you have, the pasuk includes beit aviha. So Beit Aviyah is closely associated with a Ne'ara, and probably always here, a Ne'ara Murasa, who gets married, and then he claims that she didn't have Bitulim, and that she was violated before he had Nisuim with her, before he consummated the marriage, she was violated, which means she was violated as a Ne'ara Amirasa. So for that reason, the Braita reads Beit Aviyah as if it's part and parcel of the Psukim. So it says that Beit Aviyah, Prat, the Mishrasara of the Shulchei Baal. When the father's already given him over to the shluchim of the Baal, into the possession of the Baal. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, zo divrei Rabbi Meir. Our Mishnah is the position of Rabbi Meir. Aval ha-chachamim omrim, the chamim say, nara ha-me'urasa, afilu ktana b'mashma. Includes even a ktana. So the Mishnah, according to this view of Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav, says, ne'ara, she must be a nara. So I mentioned before, nara is from 12 to 12 and a half. Bogeret is above that age. Rabbi Meir says that a Bogeret's out, and so do the Chachamim. Everybody agrees that Bogeret's not included. It's either because Ne'ara v'lo Bogeret, or Bitula v'lo Bogeret. If you remember, in the Gemarot in Nashim, that a Bogeret, even though she might still be a Bitula, that her Bitulim are reduced as she ages. Just from maturity, her Bitulim are reduced, and therefore there's this diminution of the Bitulim that comes along with age and maturity, irrespective of being a Bitula or not. So she may not be qualified as a bitula anymore. So one of those two reasons, above that age, she's not qualified as a nara murasa. The question is below that age. If she's a ktana, what is the status of this situation? According to Rabbi Meir, it's nara and nara only. 12 to 12 and a half, not above, not below. The chachamim say that a ktana is included. Now it's clear that the ktana is not going to be put to death. She is a minor. She's not held accountable. She's not culpable. The question is, if the counterparty who consorted with her is going to be liable in that case if she is a ketana. So that's what the Gemara is discussing over here. That Rav Yehuda Amar Rav says, Zod Divrei Rabbi Meir, V'chachamim Omrim, Nara Murasa, Afilu Ketana B'mashma. Even a ketana is included in that. Amar Rav Acha, Midifti Ravina, Mimai, Dematnitan Rabbi Meir Hi. Why are you so certain that our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir? Ulugulute Ketana Nami. And that the Mishnah is coming to preclude not only a Bugeret, but even a ketana. Dilma Rabbanan Hi. Who says that the Rabbanan are not the authors of our Mishnah? Umute Bulgaret. And it's coming to exclude a Bulgaret, but too low and no more than that. The Mishnah only just says she has to be a Nara. It doesn't say what's excluded. You automatically assume, though it means not a Bulgaret, not a Ktana. Maybe it just means not a Bulgaret. Says Amalei, Hi, Enu Chayav Ad Shedei Nara Bitula Mi'urasa. Our Mishnah writes specifically that you're not Chayav until she is Nara Bitula Umurasa. Very specific. If you are right that it was the position of the Chachamim, it should have written this, the following. The difference between ad shetehei versus al. If you say ad shetehei, it means exclusively nara. And that's what's written in our Mishnah, and that's why it's Rabbi Meir. On the other hand, if it was the position of the Chachamim, you would have written enu chayav ela al. On a nara betula murasa, bimayile, and that's not exclusive. It says on a nara. But there on the nara could be a broader term of nara to include ketana. Doesn't exclusively say nara, and that could have fit into the Chachamim's position. But the way that our Mishnah is written, it can only fit into Rabbi Meir's position because it says ad shetehei, which is very specific in nature and saying only if it's a nara. Betula amida, there's nothing else to ask on this. I'm definitely right, and it's only Rabbi Meir is the Mishnah. By my name, Rabbi Akiva bar Adam Mirav, Balak Tana Miurasa, the Rabbi Meir Mahu. Okay, we understand according to the Chachamim, if it's a ktana, then she's considered a nara murasa, and you get the punishment of skila. That's not a question. Problem is, according to Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says nara murasa excludes both a bulgaret and a ktana. Well then, oh, in bulgaret, she'll gonna be like an eshadish, and she'll get the punishment of chenek. By a ktana, what's the punishment for the person that consorted with this ktana hamiurasa? So the gamri m'mayle, does he exclude her completely, and there's no chiyuv? He won't be culpable at all? Oh, mi skila m'mayle. Or is he simply saying he's not subject to skila, but he is only subject to chenek? Which of those two? Amalei mistavra miskila mimayitle. Rav says it makes sense to say that he's only precluding him from getting skila, but he still is chayav chenek. And then the questioner of Yaakov Ba'ada says to Rav, aktiv, umetu gam shnehem. The pasuk says that they both shall die. We read this before in the pasuk. And even though this pasuk is not found by the Nara Murasa, but rather by a regular case of Eish Adish, the Ramban suggests that the real limud is from the pasuk that we brought by Nara Murasa, which is Votzeitem et Shnehem, that they're both subject to the death penalty. But joining them together, Ad Sheyetuyu Shnehem Shavim, sounds from like that they both have to have the same punishment. They both have to be punished in the same way. They have to be, both have to be Bnei Onshin, the way Rashi writes it. They both have to be culpable parties in order for you to be Chayav.
And the Baalei Tosafot point out that that's a little difficult because we find numerous occasions where if the individual is a minor over a certain qualifying age, like a male over the age of 9 or a female over the age of 3, the counterparty is considered culpable even though the other party is not a bat onshin or a ben onshin. Therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam suggests that it doesn't mean that they have to be bnei onshin in order to be chayav. Ella, it means that they both have to be subject to the same death penalty. That means that if this individual was a gadol, or this individual was a gdola, they would be subject to the same death penalty. We have to have an equation by which the death penalties are equal. That does raise the one issue, which is the case by a bat kohen, which is by sreifa, and the man there is by chenek. That can't be because we have another drasha by the Edom Zomamim telling us that they get the punishment of the man and not the woman. So that tells you that the man does get punished, and that's a unique case. But in other instances, we're only going to punish when they both would be subject to the same penalty or the same mitah. Shotik Rav. Rav had no answer. So despite that this would be an undermining of Rav's position, Rav was silent. Either he hadn't answered the question, he just didn't bother to say it because he knew he was right, or he didn't know the answer to the question, but he felt he was right because he had a mesorah in this. He just didn't know how to answer it, and someone else will figure it out. And that's what happens. I'm a shmuel, my time was shut to Rav. Why was Rav silent? We said that, and then the subsequent story where there's rape, we said that the case says there, umei ta'ish asher shechavimah levado, that there are cases where the man alone dies, not the both of them. Now, over there, the word levado was extraneous, because you know for certain that in the rape case that the woman is patur. She didn't do anything. Why should she be chayav? So then when the Torah comes and says, umei ta'ish asher shechavimah levado, that levado is extraneous. What is it going to teach you? That sometimes only the male counterpart dies, or is subject to mita, even though the woman is not subject to mita, like a case of ketana. And that's what it teaches you. So that's what Shmuel says. There's an answer to this. Umei ta'ish asher shechavimah levado. There's actually a machloket tanaim as to which of these two psukim is ascendant. Umeitu gam shnehem. Is it the pasuk umeitu gam shnehem? Ad shiyu shnehem shavin. Until both of them are equal. Again, Rashi says, bnei onshin, divrei Rabbi Yoshaya. Rabbi Yonatan Omer, umeita ish asher shechavimah levado. Levado means even if only one of them is a ben onshin, you still be chayav. Ve'idach, umeitu gam shnehem, my dorish pe. What is Rabbi Yonatan going to do with umeitu gam shnehem? Comes to exclude anything that is physical encounters between them that does not result in bi'ah. The restriction is against bi'ah and not about a physical encounters between them.
Because Rashi premises his position on the fact that there has to be hana'ah for both parties, and that's not the case by ma'aseh chidudim.
Ve'idach, what does Rabbi Yoshaya do with ma'aseh chidudim? Ma'aseh chidudim lav klumi. There's nothing to restrict over there. There's nothing happening that you have to say is a problem. Ma'aseh chidudim is just the physical contact. That's not a violation of the woman. Now, there is an alternate girsa. You can see that over here, ma'aseh chidudim, Rashi brings it as well. He says, ayin ba'oroch erech herdusi, that it's brought down that is ma'aseh hordus. And Rashi brings that alternate girsa as well. Ma'aseh hordus is that, remember, the story goes that he embalmed the princess that was from the Chashmonaim, and he kept her because he loved her. He thought that she was so beautiful. And the Gemara over there says that he used to have bi'ah with her after she was already passed away. So ma'aseh hordus means having bi'ah with a mate. Amaravalim ute ma'aseh hordus. Not chidudim, but rather ma'aseh hordus. V'idach says ma'aseh hordus lav kumi. That's not considered to be bi'ah. Once she's passed away, then there's nothing to speak about in terms of a violation of the woman. Why would you think after death that there's any violation of the woman?
The Balei Tosafot questioned both girsot as to why you would even need a din d'oraita to preclude them, because both of them are considered to be either pritsuta only, or it's not considered to be arayot, and then why do you need this drasha at all?
V'idach ha'levado ma'idorish bei. So now, what does a Rabbi Yoshaya do with the pasuk of Rabbi Yonatan, which is hu'levado? Kedetanya, he uses this for this. Ba'ule asara b'nei adam. If 10 men have bi'ah with her, v'dain hi betula, and she still is a betula, kulam b'skila, they all get skila. Again, the only way that can happen is shelo kedarka. The 10 men had bi'ah with her shelo kedarka. We learn from the word mishkevei isha that you are chayav even for bi'ah shelo kedarka. So then she could still be a betula. Every one of them will be chayav skila. Rabbi Omer arishon b'skila v'kulam b'chenek. The first one gets skila, everyone else gets chenek, even though she's still a betula. He learns that out from the pasuk of umeitaish asher shechavima levado. Only the one who sleeps with her, the first one who sleeps with her by himself, he will get skila. Everyone else afterwards will get
chenek. And that's what Rabbi Yoshaya will do with the pasuk of Meteisha Sheshachamim Adavado. Tan Rabbanan. Ubat ish kohen ki techel iznot. If a daughter of a kohen starts to have znot, and we spent time earlier in the Masechta about what exactly the case is, again, whether it's a Nara Murasa, or what exactly is the status of this Bat Kohen that we're speaking about, Rabbi Omer Tchila, it has to be the first. V'chein Omer U'meita'isha Sheshachav Yimah Levado. Similar to what we have here in the Pasuk here, that this individual alone will be put to death. Maik Amar. What is he saying? It's some cryptic statement. What's the explanation of it? Amar Rav Huna, Breder of Yeshua, Rabbi K'Rabbi Shmuel Svirle. Rabbi Ozek Rabbi Shmuel, Damar Arusa, Yotza the Sreifa velo Nisua. That only a Bat Kohen Arusa gets Sreifa, the unique punishment for a Bat Kohen, only applies to an Arusa, does not apply to a Nisua. V'choki kamar, im tchilat bia biznut, if the beginning of her bia is biznut, bisreifa, then she's subject to Sreifa. Idach, anything else, bechenek, my bechen, and then what does it mean, and? Why is it similar to our case? Ki hotam, ma hotam b'tchilat bia kamishtai kra. Just like over here, it's talking about the beginning of the bia. Hachanami b'tchilat bia mishtai kra. So too over here, the case is talking about tchilat bia. Just like in the case of the nara ha-me'urasa, that after the first time, it switches from skila to chenek, even if she still remains a betula, that's what we learned for Rabbi. Only the first bia is subject to the punishment. Everything after that drops down to eshadish, and is no longer considered to be nara ha-me'urasa. So after the bria rishona, there's a drop down in the punishment. Same thing with the Bat Kohen. It's only for that first Bia, for that Nara Murasa, that it's classified as being Znut, and the first Bia is the problem. The Bia afterwards is considered to be Eshadish, not considered to be Bat Kohen, Ki Techel Znut. So in both cases, the first Bia is the problem. If any other Bia takes place before that time, then you drop down. You're not in that Parsha anymore.
Whether that is the case where there are multiple times of znut, or if the husband's bia precedes the bia of znut, and that means that the znut is not her first bia.
For nara murasa, you drop down from nara murasa to eshadish. By bat kohen, you drop from bat kohen of sreifa to a regular eshadish of chenek. And that's the comparison between them. Amar le rabbi barbaye, mar lo hachi amar? Didn't our master say, umano rav Yosef? It's interesting, because Abaye is a talmid of rav Yosef. Here we have rabbi barbaye, Abaye's son, calling Rav Yosef the master, meaning that his father's Rebbe, Rav Yosef. Didn't Rav Yosef explain this differently? Rabbi k'Rabbi Meir sphirli. Rabbi doesn't hold like Rabbi Shmuel. He holds like Rabbi Meir. Damar, niseit le'echad min epsulim, mitata b'chenek. If a bat kohen marries someone who makes her into a psula, then if afterwards she has an extramarital affair, she's not subject to sreifa, she's a regular eshadish of chenek. V'chachi ka'amar. And this is what it means. Im tchilat achalta b'znut. If her profaning happens through znut, then she is b'sreifa. And that's what it means, ki techel liznut. That's when she begins to have znut. The beginning has to be znut. So only if the first bia that she has that's problematic is znut, will she have sreifa. On the other hand, this case where she marries a psula, the first bia she has profanes her even though it's not znut. That means ki techel liznut is no longer in effect because it won't be the first problematic bia, znut. It's already a problematic bia that's coming after another problematic bia that already made her psula. So that first bia made her psula. V'idach, b'chenek, any other bia would be with chenek. Afterwards, she'll only be subject to regular eshadish, not that of a bat kohen. Umay v'chein, then what is v'chein? What are you comparing it to our case here by the case of Narusa? Simona ba'alma. It's not a true comparison. It's simply a general genre of the same thing, which is that at the beginning of something, the din is different. Which is here by Nara Murasa, the first bia gains you skila. Any bia after that is subject to chenek. By the case of the Bat Kohen, the first bia is subject to sreifa, as long as it's znut. But there is a case where a bia comes before that can ruin it. And that is if you have a bia psula, if she marries someone that makes her psula, the kuhuna, then that already would take her out of the parsha of Bat Kohen. Pasuk is makpid on a tchila, on something in the beginning. By the case of the Bat Kohen, it's makpid that the first bia be biat znot. And the case by Nara Murasa is just it's makpid on the first bia period. That the first bia is what makes you chayav. Anything after that will not be chayav. Alright, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Samach Zayin Amud Aleph.